planning to serve on this commission, and I thank you, sir, for, you know, your agreeing to serve on that committee. So if you want to.
Thank you, Madam President. I will do so, and I guess my question is, the vote is in December,
yes,
correct?
The vote is in December,
so,
yeah.
And then there will be a special meeting held just before the regular meeting at the December meeting.
That's correct.
For us to actually be able to elect our new officers.
Absolutely.
Got it.
Thank
okay.
you. So that's the plan moving forward. So okay. Any commissioners? Okay.
So I move this as suggested by our board president.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay. Calling the question. All in favor of that decision?
Aye.
Aye. So the ayes have it. Thank you. Thank you, commissioners. Next.
All right. Item number 8, resolution establishing an infrastructure and transportation committee consisting of 3 members of the Treasure Island Development Authority Board of Directors to serve a 1-year term.
I am presenting. I'm very honored. This is my idea. I'm presenting this resolution of fellow commissioners because, as I said earlier, our main goal is to help to foster an environment to guide the city and all the stakeholders that are involved in this development. And over the last years, I have listened to all the commissioners, Commissioner Fei-Siang, asking questions. Commissioner Mazzola, you know, every one of us have been asking questions as to what kind of involvement are we going to have. It is okay to have regular meetings, but I think that in the history of any successful development, you also need to create an avenue where you can really have engage. We may want to bring experts. We may want to debate issues. The infrastructure and the transportation aspect of this development warrant that we pay more attention, be more engaging. And what about the sustainable aspect of the development? So after pondering about this, I decided that now is the time for us to be able to concentrate on that, I engage the city attorney. And so what we have today is that I get to be the chair of this committee. I created it so we can guide it. But every single of our commissioners out here on this committee, because all the issues that you've raised are going to be on the calendar to be debated so we can find a solution. And we are also blessed to have Mr. Bob Beck to come in on this, to be the director of Treasure Island. He's going to be working very closely with all of us. A while back, one of the commissioners mentioned about how do we move things off the island and when we're trying to develop. All of these things are candidates for the infrastructure committee. So I am going to nominate folks on that committee, and again, based on what we know of their expertise. Joining me on that committee, I'm going to nominate Commissioner Faith Sand. She's a development expert like myself, and she's well-known in the city, and she brings a lot to the table. There is a special of all the members. I'm creating a special section for Dr. Thomas Aragon. His expertise leading this city, he is going to be someone that it is going to be a contact person when we deal with the environmental matters. How do we need to mitigate? What are the environmental impact? What are we doing about the sustainable aspect of this, development? So he brings a lot to the table that can guide this commission. And this infrastructure committee is going to be transparent. It's a city a committee. That means that everything that is said and done there will be transparent to the residents, to the commission, and everyone. We will debate that. And every of your commissioners out here that have issues or items they want to bring to the end, this is your opportunity now. You are being challenged to be part of this committee here so that folks from, we have our stakeholders, our private sector, SFCTA is guiding us with the transportation, for instance. We have other companies that are guiding us with the infrastructure. Now we can be able to get this going to be able to advise the city so that There is no point for us here to be asking questions as to how things are going when we know that we are part of the stakeholders. Hence, the creation of this Treasure Island Infrastructure and Transportation Committee. The acronym could be TIT or TIDA or whatever we want to call that. So I respectfully submit before you this resolution and entertain your comments, please. Thank you. Yes, sir.
So you have proposed a committee with three members?
Yes, three members? Yes.
I would just like to ask if, considering it's the residents themselves who are directly affected, the current residents and the future residents, and that there, it seems it would be reasonable to have a resident on this particular committee.
Your point is well taken, and again, we only can have three out there. You could be a member, at large. Having those three ad hoc committee does not preclude any of the members from getting involved in this, committee. So because we are going to be talking about infrastructure development, transportation, the science of that, the systems, intermodal, and again, someone that we oversee helping us to address environmental impact or any kinds of, impact that we have. We brought, Commissioner Thomas Aragon there. You will be, as again, for the duration of this, to get this thing off the ground. Again, we're just creating this. Who knows? You might be the chair of the next one. Again, that we want you to focus is that we are creating this committee. It's a responsibility. It's never been done before, so that, and I'm sure the resident will be pleased, because now when you come in, your specific questions, comments will be incorporated, and we'll be able to give you answers. And so that's why we are creating that. Thank you.
If I may ask another question, and this probably would also then go to our attorney advisor. I mean, so there can only be three in a committee because it's a subcommittee, but even if there's just three, it still would require advising and making a public notice of that committee, I believe. And so I'm not sure if having a fourth is problematic or not. So I guess I'd like to ask our attorney.
For the record, Alicia Cabrera, Deputy City Attorney. Typically, our office advises for subcommittees that it should not be an even number because of the votes. So you will have a practical problem if you have a four committee where you could potentially have two votes on one side and then there's no recommendation to the body. So all the recommendations from the Infrastructure and Transportation Committee would have to come to the body as a whole. So that's a practical issue for consideration.
Okay, thank you. I have Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam President. I mean, it's always good to have public process, and public process is always good, and community input is always good. I guess my only question about this, and I really do respect looking more deeply into certain issues as to what kind of an impact this is going to have on, I mean, we already have a process at the TIDA board. We have our staff, very able staff that comes to us and makes reports and informs us of the projects, the infrastructure development projects. Everything comes to the full board. I guess my question is, what is missing in your opinion, because you are the author of this resolution, what is missing that you feel the need to have another body look at this?
Thank you very much. That is a very great question. There are lots of things that are missing. Infrastructure, the systems, the transportation. If you look at the calendar that we have, this committee does not preclude. In fact, it enhances what Mr. Bob Beck, and he can speak to that, because it enables us to bring experts to really go into engagement, and we are going to be, as a policymaker, that to be guiding the SFCTA, the Board of Supervisors, or whatever. If you remember, in the EDC MOA, the Economic Development Conveyance Memorandum of Understanding, which actually slated the guidelines of transportation. If you read that document, the criteria and the specifications and all the issues that are out there that are supposed to guide this development are massive. Having our overall meeting that we are having, it won't cut that. And again, moving on, there are going to be issues that are coming that we need to address. And again, that's hence the transparency nature of that. We will be able to bring the experts out here that can really do the work. And some of the questions that were asked during the DCMOA, in which some of the commissioners were talking about, how are we going to be involved here? Are we just going to be sitting here? I think your time, each one of you coming, being appointed to this commission, and the expertise you have, mean a great deal. And now that we get into the development, there's still a lot of uncertainties, a lot of opportunities out there, especially transportation. Where are we going? So it's more than just having a 10-minute presentation. We have confidence in our staff. In fact, Mr. Bob Beck, strongly, they're doing the heavy lifting, agrees with the creation of this because it enhances the work that he's doing. So thank you.
Just adding to Director Richardson's comments, in our discussion, I think that the thought was to provide additional time where some of the presentations that we have been bringing to the board could be made to a committee and perhaps go into even greater depth and allow for more questions and feedback from the board members in a smaller forum, and then bring those, all of the action items that flow from that, obviously, to the full board for approval.
So if I may ask just one more question.
Yes.
So how do you envision this? Will this be a publicly noticed meeting happening here at City Hall in this room, perhaps more sort of like a subcommittee of the Board of Supervisors where they have a committee, you make a recommendation out of committee to take it to the full board? Is this going to be...
Yes, it will have to be true because this is a city committee. You cannot make any decision without the transparency. It's going to be bound by just about everything. Yes, if we are able to get this room, we will, or any other room. But yes, it will be transparent. It will be publicly noticed every day because you are making discussions. So it will be just like everything out here, and that's the way you make decision. And the board, your commissioners on any items, we'll have to vote on that. We'll have to be part of that. In fact, everyone is going to be challenged at some point to be part of this committee because you are out there, you're hearing things and things that you are bringing about or concerned about. This will be the avenue for you to be involved with. So at some point, we are also going to be looking at the participation of the commissioners out down there, what you bring out there since. So that's answer your question, sir.
Director Richardson, I think that it would be good to clarify the role of the committee. My understanding is that the committee actually will not make decisions for what should be the TIDA Commission's role. It is merely to hear in more detail any reports, get into various issues, give it more time than what we might have at the TIDA board meetings.
Absolutely. And that's clarified because we work as a body, so we make collective decisions. And so that alleviates any kind of concerns that anybody might have, is that this is going to be a committee where you really bring a lot of substance in there, but the decisions on any of the items before the board rest on the individual commissioner. So this is not one committee trying to grandfather, and thank you, you understand that very clearly. And that's the intent of this committee. Thank you. So we have a resolution.
I will move the item.
Thank you. I have a resolution. Moved.
Second.
Okay, seconded. I'm going to call the items. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you very much.
I oppose. I feel that the tenants and the people who are living there are being left out of this extremely important aspect of development.
Thank you, sir. So we have the vote and to move this item forward. So this committee is created. Thank you, with one abstention.
Next. No, it wasn't an abstention. I voted no.
Oh, yeah, with one no, I'm sorry. Correction. We have one no from the commissioners, so let it be reflected on the record. Thanks.
Calling for public comment under item number 8.
Any public comments?
Becky Hill, resident. Mark, I just want to say thank you. You are a representative, and I appreciate that you are fighting for us up there. And I agree. I think Mark should be part of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Are there any other public comments? I see none. Thank you. Next.
Item number 9, Utility Master Plan Review.
So I'll just introduce Todd Adair with the BKF, consultant to Treasure Island Community Development. As I mentioned in my staff report, the development team will be submitting to city agencies for review this month the utility master plan, and Todd's going to go over some of the work that has gone into that and some of the communications we've been having with city agencies.
Thanks, Bob. Again, Todd Adair with BKF Engineers. So we'll quickly run through an overview of the infrastructure to date and what we're currently working on, some of the things that we've accomplished over the last couple of months and what our next steps forward will be. How do you make this go forward, Bob? Enter.
Should be able to use the arrow keys.
Just the arrow key? So we'll run through some of the mapping work and topo work that we're doing right now, the site planning, some of the street cross sections that we've been reviewing, and then
go through the utility systems.
From the mapping side of things, what I'm showing here is the area that's being proposed as the first Navy transfer area, the yellow area. We've been going through some process with the Navy and sort of defining where these lines are, finalizing some of the boundaries of these different areas so that we can move forward and write some legal descriptions here, as Bob was saying, later this month. That area is slightly different than it was before, so that will require some revisions to also the state lands transfer parcels. So we've been going through that as well and defining the new areas based on what the first transfer property will be. And Bob had mentioned before that later this month, the state lands will be acting on that agreement with these revisions incorporated as well. So some of the things we've completed to date on the mapping and topo side, we've completed a design aerial topo for all of TI and YBI. We've surveyed all of the existing utility information in the phase one area. And we've confirmed again with the Navy that we've adjusted the limits of the conveyance property. State lands process, we're in the middle of doing that right now, and that new agreement will be on heard by the commission on October 15th. Our next steps, Navy conveyance, just preparing the legal descriptions for the transfer, and then for the state completing those legal descriptions for that exchange. On the street cross section, there's going to be a streetscape master plan that I know you guys will review here in the next month or so. What we've been working with the fire department, planning department, MTA, and DPW to finalize some of the concerns regarding fire access and widths of streets. So through several meetings with the fire department, we've coordinated what they would like to see as far as unobstructed width. What I'm showing in red is on this slide is what the infrastructure plan had for that unobstructed width, in red being the 20 feet and in green being the 26 feet. Some of the streets now in cooperation with the Fire Department of Planning and MTA and DPW, we've changed some of those streets to 26 feet unobstructed width. Those revisions have mostly been in adding a bike lane, slightly widening some of the travel lanes, and revising some of the parking bay widths. So if I go back and forth, you can kind of see what the changes have been, the red streets that turn to green. And so that's what right now we have agreement with fire department and planning on. So we've been meeting with the fire department, MTA, DPW, planning, and we have agreement now on what those unobstructed widths will need to be. Moving forward, the streetscape plan, which will come back before you, and then we'll develop construction drawings with the phase one area. Looking at utilities, starting with potable water, it's the same as the layout was in the infrastructure plan. Water will be coming over the western span of the Bay Bridge to new tanks up on YBI constructed with the project, and then replacing all of the existing water systems throughout the island in phases. So YBI will completely change or revise or update all of that waterline system. On TI, we'll replace all of the phase one area, the subphase area, and then tie into existing water systems that serve the rest of the island at the edge of the 1A or the subphase one area. The PUC no longer requires a secondary water source from East Bay Mud. They've done some studies and they're satisfied that the size of the water tanks and replacing all the existing water system will be sufficient for redundancy on the island. The water tank layout, preliminary layout that we've been reviewing with the PUC, shows that we have two water tanks on the western side of the island. Both of those tanks about 1.5 million gallons, and then replacing the one tank that's right currently on McCullough Road, the 1 million gallon tank that sits there, we'll be replacing that one as well. So completed to date, we've been meeting regularly with the PUC, their central distribution division, coordinating the water tank design, the basis of the design, the life cycle costs. We settled on a steel tank scenario. So we're working through some of the logistics of what that tank design will be, pumping requirements, et cetera, with them right now. Reviewing the existing water system on TI, for us to connect to it at the boundary of our phase one, we need to understand what the existing system that will remain in place, what the capacity, what the flow, what the pressures will be of that system, and make sure that we keep that going even with our replacement area. We developed the first draft of the subdivision regulations for the technical specifications for the water system, and we're going to start reviewing that with the PUC here. Next steps, we go to a water master plan, which completes the studies with all the detail needed to show up the roadmap for the water system as we build out the island. And then after that, develop the construction drawings for subphase one. Wastewater system. Again, replacing the entire system in phases that's out there today. And the location of the treatment plant in the northeast corner done by the PUC in time. We're not anticipating that replacement will be done with the first phase, but soon thereafter the PUC is scheduled to replace that sewer treatment plant area. Meeting again with the PUC, the Wastewater Enterprise Group, finalizing some of the technical items that are required for the design of the system, and developing the master plans, or the subdivision regulations and the technical specs for that sewer design. The next step is to create the master plans, finish our modeling, pipe sizing, slopes, et cetera, and then developing subphase one. Recycled water system. Just for Treasure Island, we're not proposing to have recycled water on YBI just because of the pumping required to get from the sewer treatment plant to YBI is pretty substantial. So we'll have the recycled water system serving all the non-domestic needs of the island. It'll also act as a secondary source for fire protection. So we'll have recycled water system fire hydrants on the island, tanks and pump stations as well. We've reviewed this with the fire department. They're satisfied with the secondary source, but they've also requested that we install a dedicated line for connection to the bay to certain portions of the island that they want to be sure that they can get water in emergency conditions. So we worked out what that will look like and have agreement with the fire department on that layout. Again, completed to date, weekly, biweekly meetings with the PUC CDD division, finalizing the design requirements for the recycled water system, developing maximum velocities and pressures and flows, et cetera. We've developed, again, the draft technical memos and subdivision regulations, or technical specs and subdivision regulations for the recycled water system. Next steps, we'll develop the master plans again, and then move into the phase one construction drawings. Stormwater system, again, replacing all of the system out on the island, new outfalls, new pipes, in phases, again in phases. So our subphases will be constructing new stormwater systems. The existing areas will continue to use the existing systems until they're replaced in the future. Along with stormwater system design, we have our stormwater treatment concepts. We're working through with the PUC, start working through with the PUC some of the stormwater control plans that we need. All of the water in the new areas will be treated before outfalls to the bay. The existing systems, again, will remain in place until such time we replace all of that. Completed to date again, meeting with the PUC Wastewater Enterprise, and we're going to start developing the permit applications for the outfalls into the bay. Those permit applications for the Corps, Regional Board, et cetera, and BCDC. We're starting that process now. Next steps, develop the master plans, finalize the master plans, process the outfall permits, develop our stormwater control requirements or required by the PUC, and then develop construction drawings for phase one. Dry utility system, replacing again everything on the island right now, currently. The power comes from the East Bay, from the Oakland Army Base. Continue to bring that power across the bay at the same location. The PUC is currently going through their feasibility and negotiations to provide that power, be the power provider for the island. We'll be putting a new substation on the eastern side of the island for that system that comes across the bay, and then feeding our new development from that new substation. The existing system will remain in place. We will feed that existing system from the new substation basis as well. Gas completely replaced throughout the island, becoming a PG&E service. Right now, PG&E brings it to a point on the eastern side of the island, and then from there, it's Navy system. The new project, the new areas of development will be served by PG&E for gas. So what we've completed to date, is meeting with the Power Enterprise Group at PUC, going through logistics with them about what their requirements are, what their design parameters are, finalizing the agreements with the PUC for being the power provider is our next step, and then develop the master plans and the infrastructure drawings again. We are still considering the use of automated waste collection system on the island. If you're not familiar with that, it's kind of a pneumatic system. For trash collection, brings out all the trash to one location. It's still being reviewed by both the development team and also the provider, Transvac, to be sure that it's feasible and can be done in phases. We need to locate a collection point, which is being reviewed right now by both TICD, TIDA, and also Transvac as well. So a lot of questions still about the system. A lot of things we still need to work through with them, but we are sort of proceeding with doing those studies and talking with them on a regular basis. So that's all that I have. If you have some questions, I can answer those.
Thank you very much for your presentation as you were presenting all these systems. I think the first thing that comes to mind, and even on the day that we created the infrastructure subcommittee, is to have a master schedule in where you delineate your subsystems, be it storm water, dry utility, recycled, potable water systems, and kind of show us what has been completed, the next steps. Again, the dates don't have to be precise. And the reason is that we can look at this master schedule to be able to ask specific questions and to see how we are and proceeding with the development, I think it's going to be very helpful. Every of the commissioners out here would have that master schedule and the various questions that we really wanted to have. For instance, the potable water, when it would have certain questions or things that must be done to that, will correlate to that when you have your automated system. And so you already have the master plan, again, with all these systems. But I think right now for us it would be great. There are a lot of questions that, even looking at your presentation, individual items, the regulation and policies that I'm sure us here will want to know even what kind of agreement are being made at one point. So you can please, based on this, we can have that master schedules. Okay. And then, and later on, we'll be updating them. It would be really very helpful for us to have that bigger picture.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail in getting these systems designed and built.
Yes.
So,
thank you,
I understand
sir.
The need for that.
Okay. Commissioner Dunlap.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. First, just kind of a general question. I'm pretty sure I know the answer. All our water on the island does come from the city, which it comes from Hetch Hetchy, then it comes here, and then it gets pumped back to the island. Over on the bridge, is that then correct?
There's on the western
pipeline.
Yeah, on the western span.
Right. And then what if that broke for some reason? Is that the one line that supplies the island? Is there a secondary line?
So there's not a secondary line. There was a secondary line taken out by Caltrans, although different reports say that line wasn't working, hadn't been working for quite some time. But the idea is to build new storage on the island. The current storage out there is pretty minimal and susceptible to issues, earthquakes and other things. So it's at a very minimal capacity. So we're going to replace that with redundant amount of water. So the requirement is 2 days of max flow and also fire protection. So it ends up being about 4 million gallons of water on the island. So the PUC has reviewed that, satisfied that 4 million gallons is enough to get them through any condition that might occur on the western span of the bridge.
I know in the San Francisco proper itself, there's been a lot of concern about many of the pipes had been installed in the early 1900s or some of them even earlier. The pipes that bring water to the island, are those also ancient?
I can't speak to the system itself that feeds water to the bridge. The bridge line has been looked at over the past, I don't know, I forget when the last, it was 5 or 10 years ago that they did a study on that line and confirmed that it was still in good working condition. I can't speak to the lines leading up to the bridge. I have no idea.
Okay. Commissioner, I do know that the pump station that feeds the line on the Bay Bridge was reconstructed in 1999-2000 timeframe. And I believe that they went through and checked the line on the Bay Bridge and made some improvements to it at the same time that the pump station was done.
Great.
I do know that the PUC has closely looked at the reliability of water on the island because of the same concerns about reliability on the bridge, et cetera, and are satisfied that the 4 million gallon tank and the new system that we're going to build on the island is sufficient.
And looking at the stormwater system, it looks like, at least from what I'm seeing here, that the water will get just returned to the bay. Is there any possibility that water can actually be reused for, there's going to be like a farm on the island and for other uses?
The challenge with the reuse of stormwater is when you reuse it. So it's raining, so you don't need to be watering things. That's when it collects. So then you have to store it for a period of time. And then there's the issue of the condition of it once it's stored for could be weeks, could be months, that it's before it's needed. So that's one of the things that we considered when we looked at reusing rainwater, is that the storage of it and the amount that we'd have to store to make it really worthwhile is very difficult to do. The other issue is we have a recycled water system proposed on the island. So that is going to be serving all of the non-domestic uses, right? So there's sort of debate whether that's more important than the reuse of rainwater, right? Or recycled water use versus using rainwater. So those things were sort of considered when we put the plan together originally.
Okay, thanks. And just one last question. I noticed you took into account 16 inches for the sea level rise. You know, some people are actually predicting more now. So I assume that isn't set in stone, the 16 inches.
Well,
it's flexible.
So the 16 inch is the first step in sea level rise. If when we get 16 inches of sea level rise, then the system is adapted. So pump stations need to be added and things like that that take it back to or can accommodate future sea level rise predictions, right? So our initial design handles 16 inches, no changes to be made. And so that, you know, depending on which graph you look at, is 50 years, 100 years out, depending on which ones you look at. So the thought was that will get us to a point where funding can be in place to adapt that system for pump stations, et cetera, to protect the island.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner Fischer.
Yes. Since we're putting in new infrastructure for the island, it seems to me that there's a remarkable opportunity to build infrastructure that is forward-thinking, actually to serve the next century or more, rather than relying on old technologies. And I'd like to know, it's maybe too long of a discussion today, but maybe you can summarize some of the thinking on how we're using the sustainable features of these systems. For instance, are we thinking of having treated gray water for irrigation? Are there ways that we're collecting the storm water so that it can percolate through the landscape rather than just treating it and putting it into the bay? Are we thinking of using the water system as also for cooling and heating? There's, as you know, being in the field, there's a lot of technologies that have been tried and are being talked about, are innovative. And here's a chance, because it's difficult to retrofit existing buildings and sure. existing systems. But this is a situation where we can actually build new, a very rare chance to build new. Sure. And why not then incorporate the best, you know, of the technologies that are available now, thinking forward to, you know, what the next century will be. But sure. if you could summarize for us some of the thinking on, you know, sort of sustainability, on how we treat, you know, rainwater and stormwater, those types of issues which are so important for us now sure. To consider, that would be useful.
Yeah, and we can spend
yes,
a lot of time talking about sustainability. There was a sustainability study done for the project back when we put the infrastructure report together. So just to summarize some of the items that you brought up, the reuse of rainwater, but I think I talked about it a minute ago, was considered. And the issue is we have a recycled water plant being proposed, which provides recycled water all year round. The rain, and so watering plants, domestic, non-domestic type uses for that. So storing rainwater on the island to do the same thing sort of is counter to that system. But it also means that you got to reuse, you need to store the water for a long period of time in order to use it in any substantial way. So irrigation being sort of one of those uses, you don't irrigate when it's raining, and that's when you're collecting the rainwater. So you got to store it for several months. So the energy to pump that system, to treat that system, some of the chemicals that we would need to do to keep the, you know, the bacteria and other things from growing in that water that we're storing for several months sort of outweighed the need for using recycled water. And so that's why we didn't go more to harvesting rainwater and using it. The treating of the rainwater will be sort of integrated into the open space areas. And so it won't just be, you know, a box in the ground where it's treated before it goes out. It'll have some sustainable aspects to it in sort of irrigating or percolating through an area. We can't percolate it into the groundwater because the groundwater is too close. And so some of the requirements, you know, we need a little bit more depth to that. So, but it will be used I mean, there will be design aspects to it in the landscaped areas of the parks. So it won't just be a, you know, a vault type thing. Some of the other sustainable ideas on the island, you know, the grid and the way it's slanted is one of the, you know, was done for a reason, for sustainability and sunshine and wind and things like that. There's still some question about power and whether we want to, or what we do, you know, in the system itself for smart grid, that kind of thing. So we'll be working through that with the PUC or PG&E, depending on how that plays out. But it sounds like it'll be the PUC. So we'll be working with them about what that means. So sustainability is certainly in the forefront of the design, the idea of it. And so we can spend some more time and go through.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. You know, while we're still talking about the guiding philosophy of this development, sustainability, and we're looking at your completed to date of all these subsystems, and it would be great, that information, in order for us to point into Commissioner Fissen's statement earlier, to really look at what the analysis of what the existing systems are, to really, and then as you progress in your discussions with all the stakeholders, to really see what they are talking about. Because we also know there are cost implications in all of this stuff, but as we said, it's better to invest in innovative and state-of-the-art that is going to sustain the development than just patching up the systems. And there are going to be occasions when someone, even here from City Hall, might, you know, recommend maybe we should patch the system now or whatever. But through a rigorous debate with experts, and it might guide the stakeholders to be open-minded to look at systems, and that's where we come in at this commission. So at some point, we'd like to look at some of the analysis of all the subsystems to be even thinking about what are these people, what are they talking about right now, into so we can make those informed decisions with you when we get to that point.
Sure. So with your infrastructure committee, we can get into that in detail. If that's
thank you, sir.
What you'd like to do.
Commissioner Mazzola.
Yeah, I just one question. I think you touched on this a little while ago, but just for clarification, are the tanks that are used for potable water, are they also used for fire protection, or do you have separate fire protection?
No,
tanks?
They're used for their size to have fire protection in them. We've created three of them so that you can take one offline and maintain it while the other two provide the same level of fire protection.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Commissioner Summer.
Is there something new here that we haven't seen before? I mean, this all came before this commission probably years ago,
sure.
What, 3-4 years ago, and we voted on the plan. Is this something different? Are we just getting more into the details of it?
We're getting more into the details of it. There's right. You know, a few things that are being adjusted. For example, the dry pipe that we talked to the fire department about for bay water connection, things like that. So there's sort of around the edges, just kind of polishing it a little bit, but the basics are the same.
Right. So will there, I guess my question is, I know we've taken several votes to approve all this earlier, and will there be at any one time any need to reapprove a change, or at what point does it rise to the level of us having to reauthorize?
The utility master plan and streetscape master plan are intended to inform the major phase application, and the major phase application takes all of the first phase of development to the schematic design level, so beyond kind of the planning level work that was done. So there is an approval by the board of the major phase application and by TIDA, and then for the first subphase, they actually take that to the 50% construction documents level, and that's anticipated to be in the May timeframe. That we would come back again in the May timeframe for May June for approval of the subphase application. So as they continue to refine the details, there will be additional times when we come back to the board for approvals.
So hence the tie into the subcommittee, maybe some of the details. Maybe looked at more closely in the subcommittee phase, and then come to the full board for our for the vote, basically.
Absolutely. Yes. There is a need to look at the discussions right now. For example, if you look at the utility, the city has been pinpoint back and forth with SFPUC, and they've had different iterations on how they really wanted to go. Should they do something now just to keep everything quiet? And then having to revisit that, and the discussions are saying, no, maybe the best way to really invest. However, when you develop, you incorporate that. So there are still some very critical decisions that have been delayed. So the detail of that, even what the discussions are. And again, to ensure that we really have the right state-of-the-art technology and everything is a great concern to, I'm sure, all of us that are sitting here. And so that's what we need to do. Thank you, sir. I do not have any further comment from commissioners, and I'm going to ask the public, please, for your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. I know the further comments.
Item number 10, TIMA congestion management update.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Rachel Hyatt. I'm a principal planner with the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. And good to see, I know I've been here last time, I think, myself in February, our team last time in July. And good to see some of the new members. Good to meet you. Let me just pull this up. Get that correct? Okay, great. So the SFCTA, in addition to managing the YBI ramps replacement project, we also have been designated by the Board of Supervisors to serve as the Treasure Island Mobility Management Agency. The role of this agency was called for in the past planning work, original 2006 transportation vision, and then authorized by the 2008 state legislation that called for and described the Treasure Island Transportation Program, and that I know many of the board members, although perhaps not all of you, were involved in setting up and having adopted as part of the 2011 development approvals. The purpose of my item today is to update you on the progress we've been making since our last update in July. I show this just for the new members who perhaps weren't involved in developing the 2011 Treasure Island Transportation Implementation Plan, which set forth the vision for how the new transportation system serving the redeveloped island would operate. There were four principles or four major goals that the program's trying to achieve, supporting walking and biking through land use and through a lot of new transit service and other services on island, by providing high-quality transit and expanding significantly the amount of transit service to and from the island, discouraging driving, and again, this overall sustainability theme as part of the transportation program, not just in the infrastructure program, discouraging driving through a toll program that would apply to non-HOV driving during congested periods, parking pricing, and a required transit pass and ramp metering. And then the financial sustainability goal, as well as the environmental sustainability goal, those revenues that would in part serve to discourage driving would also serve as the source for funding for the new transit services and other services on the island. So with those four goals in mind, and actually I wanted to show this again too. This is the proposed transit service levels for the peak periods on and off Treasure Island, and it's really a ambitious vision for transit service. I wanted to remind us about just how what a significant improvement in transit service we're trying to shoot for with this program. It's a new East Bay transit service to and from San Francisco to the East Bay. It's a additional muni service, so over and above the service levels that we have today on the 108, and a new ferry service to downtown San Francisco at very high service frequencies, peak period 15-minute ferry service, which no place else in the Bay Area has that, and this island would. This is the schedule that we're operating under, trying to work with TIDA and TICD to have the transportation program ready for service when the first home sales, first homes are ready for occupancy in 2018. Working back from that, we're working with the transit operators to at least be able to begin bus transit service in 2018, if not ferry service, and have the toll program in place so we can start earning revenues and make sure that folks understand, you know, how this toll system would work as they're looking whether to buy or rent a home on Treasure Island. Working back from that, we need to have some policies, at least initial set of policies in place for how the toll system would work so we can build that into the whole program. That's what we're working on now. We're focusing on year 2030, looking at what projected demand would be like in 2030, what sort of policies would likely need to be in place for the toll program to make sure that it can meet its transportation sustainability goal and financial sustainability goal. The goal that we have for the study is to be able to bring back recommendations on this topic to you and to the Treasure Island Mobility Management Agency Board, the Board of Supervisors, by next summer. The particular policy questions that are not yet answered and will be looking for your input and ultimately a vote from you include the following. Who is tolled? Is it residents or all drivers who are driving during congested periods? It is only residents or all drivers. What is the toll level and schedule? When is it in place? What kind of discounts, if any, would be applied to the toll? Which directions is the toll in place? As we do that, related policy questions come up, and we're also paying attention to those, such as making sure that the transit levels of service are the service levels that we'll need to meet the performance goals, looking at what the options are for parking. So, for instance, we are assuming at this point that MTA will manage the parking the way MTA manages parking in SF Park, their SF Park pilot program areas, and the phasing. Although the policies that we're analyzing now, the demand modeling and financial modeling that we're looking at now is based on our 2030-year projections or build-out projections, we do know that the whole program is going to need to be phased in, just as the development is being phased, and we'll need to work back from that and develop interim policies, perhaps, for the initial years. As we're looking at these scenarios, policy scenarios for how the toll program would work, we're measuring the performance of those scenarios against some particular measures intended to tell us how well a given scenario is doing at meeting those four main goals of the transportation program. The scenarios that we've looked at so far include three. The first one, what you might call the base, TTIP base, represents the one scenario that was proposed in the 2011 TTIP. And at that 2011 scenario called for the toll to apply to residents only. It would be in place during the AM and PM peak periods during the weekdays, both directions on and off the island. And the toll level was proposed at $5. We're starting with the sort of $5 in today's dollars, just as a starting point. We've looked at additional scenarios beyond that for two reasons, both in an attempt to better meet the transportation performance goals of the program, as well as the financial sustainability goals of the program. We are looking at a scenario under which all drivers who, non-HOV drivers who drive during congested times would be subject to the toll, where the toll would be in place during all periods of congestion on the bridge, not just the peaks. There's congestion outside the conventional peaks on the bridge. And we've also looked at one discount so far, although there's others that are on our list to look at. And that is a discount for drivers who have already paid the Bay Bridge toll. So say you're a driver coming to Treasure Island from the East Bay. You've just paid the Bay Bridge toll. And in this scenario, you'd have a discount to reflect that. Something else. So we're looking for your feedback on all of these. I'm going to present some of the initial performance results of each of these. Another thing that we are looking for feedback on, which has a bit of effect on the performance is the toll structure. We, throughout these scenarios, we've wanted to keep the toll revenue that we're projecting to raise in scenarios 2 and 3 similar. A big difference between scenario 1 and scenarios 2 and 3 is the number of drivers who are paying the toll, because the toll under scenario 2 and 3 applies to any driver, not just resident drivers. It's more toll revenue, more people are paying it. But one difference that I want to share is the way the toll is structured. It could be structured so that it's a flat toll the way the Bay Bridge toll is, almost flat, $5 if it's in the middle of the night or if it's in the midday. Another option is to vary that toll with depending on the level of congestion and more closely tie that the toll paid to the level of congestion that's out there happening. And we propose a structure here for your feedback that would likely raise the same amount of revenue, so it's not higher on average, but the structure would be different. This is an example of what I'm talking about. This is the toll structure as it would have been, as it would be under that scenario 1, the original 2011 scenario, if the green line is representing congestion level on the bridge, and the orange is representing the toll level. So no toll during the early morning, late evening, midday periods, but a $5 toll during the conventional AM and PM peaks. You can see there that there's some periods of congestion that aren't subject to the toll. This is the scenario 2 that would extend the toll to all periods of congestion. This is a structure for that toll that would vary to more closely reflect congestion levels. And the idea there is that that will help get us closer to the congestion management function of the toll. Findings that we would draw so far about the transportation performance of these scenarios. First of all, we are finding that the program's effective. So the original planning was foresightful in that regard. We're finding that as the toll is extended to other drivers who are driving during congested times, we're seeing a greater shift to transit use and to HOV use, because HOVs are also discounted. We're seeing an effect and influence on people's choices and in the right direction, so towards sustainability. We're seeing transit being very well used. So the levels of transit service, especially for AC Transit and for Muni, are really needed to support people's choices. Areas where there's more analysis needed on the demand side. Number one, we haven't quite yet met the one mandate that the 2011 planning put out for us, which is to have 50% of the trips being made on and off the island during the peak periods be by transit. We're almost there, not quite there. One way we want to try to get there is by even further increasing the amount of ferry riders that we have. There's excess capacity right now we're projecting on the ferry service during the peak, and there's some strategies that we can put in place to encourage more folks taking the ferry. A synopsis of the performance of each of these three scenarios according to their transit mode share, the daily vehicle miles traveled that are generated by the island, and the daily transit trips. Scenario 1, I'm crossing that out just because it is very, very far from our other mandate for the program, which is that it cover its costs, be financially viable. But it also happens to not perform as well per the transportation performance measures. The other two scenarios do better. As I said, we're getting close to that 50% transit mode share target. We're not quite there. And with each of the subsequent scenarios we've tested, we've been able to gain more transit riders and reduce vehicle miles traveled and greenhouse gas emissions further. This is a profile, kind of more for your information, about what we project trip making to be like to and from Treasure Island at the build out. It's about 70,000, over 70,000 trips per day, including trips that are made on the island. Close to 60,000 trips, between 55 and 60,000 trips every day on and off the island, most of them made by residents. And one takeaway that I would draw from this that we were happy to find is that we don't see the toll, we're not projecting that the toll will have much of a discouraging effect on trip making. What we are seeing, and it's illustrated here too, is that it actually functions to encourage people to shift their trip to an HOV or to transit. And you can see that in the gray, orange, and the gray and orange bars here. The green bit of the bar is the share of folks during the peak period that are driving alone. And that's the piece we'd like to be able to shift folks away from by giving them better options and also, you know, externalizing the cost of their trip. We're not quite at that 50% transit share mark, but we're getting really close. So that's all good news. On the financial performance side, what we found so far is that there really are two key drivers of the financial profile of the whole thing. On the cost side, the key driver of cost is the ferry program, and we're focused on operations here in this presentation. Of course, we're also looking at capital and rehab costs, but the same is true for both components of the cost. So the ferry is far and away the cost driver. The revenue driver is the toll revenue. So we do also raise revenue from the required transit pass and from the parking fees, but that's not the main source. The places where we still need to do work are that we're not meeting the cost recovery requirement yet. We're about 20% off from that. So we do have a gap, and I'll show you how that breaks down in a bit before we've covered our costs. There's some options for doing that, which I'll share. And there's some additional policy matters that we know there's interest in looking at. The discount policies and, for instance, you know, refining some of the requirements for HOV discounts, for discounts for low-income residents, for I guess the SFO Oakland Bay Bridge is another one we've heard that we've tested already, but we know there's some of those things that we need to look at. This is a slide has a lot of information. What I'm wanting to do here is show you a profile of the financials of the program, the operating costs and revenues. So for each scenario, I'm showing operating revenues, operating costs, and you see that scenario one has a pretty significant shortfall, which is why we moved on to scenarios two and three, which have somewhere between $7-10 million annual operating gap still, but there's ways that we can that we think we can reduce costs, also raise additional revenues to help close that gap. Something I want to share is that in any of these scenarios, the real driver of the revenues is the toll, the congestion toll, and the driver of the cost is the ferry. So some ideas for how we can move forward and look at additional things to close that gap. On the ferry side, there's things we can do to share costs with other new ferry services. We can also look at alternative ferry service options. 15-minute ferry service is a great thing that we want to aspire to. Of course, it's a trade-off between the amount of ferry service that we're providing and what the toll level and extent needs to be to raise the revenue to afford that. So it's a question for you that we're looking for feedback on, even as we also try to bring down the ferry costs. Then on the revenue side, there are some options there. We could consider matching the toll hours to transit service hours. So when there's an alternative there, a core transit service alternative, that is when maybe a base level of toll is in place. And we also need to look at discount policies, as I was saying before. We are looking for feedback from you at this time on all of the above, and also we are looking for feedback from residents. We have been doing a survey of residents and visitors currently on Treasure Island, door-to-door, and we've got a good about 10% of all the current residents out there so far have taken it, and we're still trying to reach more. So we're having surveyors go out again next week to try to reach more people, and we look forward to bringing the results of that back to you. We're looking to understand current residents' transportation needs. And we went yesterday to the CAB and also to the Board of Supervisors in their at their meeting of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. We haven't posted it next on yet on Nextdoor.com, but I heard that that was something we should do, so we're going to do that. So I welcome your feedback. Look forward to coming back and working with the new subcommittee on transportation as we get your input and continue to evolve these.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation, Rachel. I think the commissioners are going to need a copy of this presentation. We're really surprised we didn't have it. So we could have digested a lot of stuff before we came here and loaded with questions. So if, Kate, you can get that PowerPoint and even and copies also that we can have a couple of questions. This particular presentation is germane to a lot of things on the island, mm-hmm. especially for our residents. If we understand what is being presented, the dialogue, it will make it easier because we know now that there are so many stakeholders out there. When you talk about the initial policy directions and the related policy directions, I think we really need to know what in detail next time, you know, what these are and what's driving them. And so we can all be at the same, you know, page here. The issue with ferry service, I think we said earlier on that this project is going to be a signature project in the entire Bay Area for the country. That's going to really change and bring ferry service in part with other intermodal type of transportation. And the fact is that Treasure Island is uniquely situated as it is now without any development. You could hardly move at 3 o'clock every day. Even we make the toll $20, $30, yeah, some folks that need to go to the East Bay are going to find a way to go there. So we're already at the bottleneck right now before any of the development. So we can visualize what it is. What we wanted to do is create an access so that even people's behavior which says, I'm not taking that road there. I want to go ferry. And how do we do that? The related policy directions that will make that to happen in San Francisco is going to involve investment from the city and county of San Francisco so that when we have bond measures that we are having for transportation, this might be an item there for the city to put money in there because this is the overall. So we can sever ourselves from the city. And then with all the related state and the federal agencies that are going to be funding transportation, maybe this is the time to be looking at this now, you know, going beyond us thinking outside the box so that we can begin to assess those questions because there are going to be two types of people living on Treasure Island, the ordinary Joe and Kathy that are out there just you know, want to go by, and then we're going to have visitors. I don't care if the visitors can pay more to out there, but the residents that live there, I think we wanted to really look forward to making sure that their lives is not going to be that much impacted, it becomes so costly. So our public transportation systems and any kind of transportation alternatives, they have to be really strong and might be able to enhance the entire transportation for the entire Bay Area that other cities may want to partner with us and to really make it a regional and thinking about MTC now. I think that's the vision that we said earlier on we would like to see here. Thank you, Commissioner Dunlop.
Thank you. This just brings up a lot of questions and concerns, certainly with the people who are living there right now. There's approximately 2,000 or so on Treasure Island, maybe 150 or so on Yerba Buena Island, and I think many of those people plan to stay, although with some of these costs, they just might be just to drive, just to, you know, get to work, it might be cost prohibitive for them. Maybe 30% of the people are perhaps on some sort of subsidy, and many people, even if not on subsidy, all housing is expensive, and the costs here are pretty high. And so if they, you know, where as they're living, their costs keep going higher and higher, $10 a trip, $10 a day, I think that would be a real burden on many people. And then just to have a visitor, it seems there's a potential cost of $10 a day. And so it just doesn't seem, I mean, it, obviously somehow or another it has to work and has to pay for itself, and people have to be encouraged to take the transit options. But many people, myself included, don't necessarily have that comfort. I have to see doctors at various times during the day that wouldn't quite work with certain transit systems. And I think it would be extremely important that as you move forward, not just going door to door and taking polls, but as you get the plan more down, actually having a community meeting, and so the people can hear, and then and you can hear of their concerns, which I think are pretty large. The traffic here on the Dragon Boat Day, certainly on the Oracle Day, it's insane. But that does not match the 60,000 people that are going to be living here. So I think there's some real huge concerns about cost and just getting the ease of getting on and off. The very first thing you showed, which would have been so handy to have something in front of us, but I think it was the one, right there, sorry, it wasn't the first, but so is the little blue every 10 minutes, is that a ferry going to Oakland, or is that just the bus? Or
it's the AC Transit bus.
Okay, so there won't,
Transbay.
There won't be a ferry going to Oakland as proposed yet.
Not as proposed currently.
Okay. So I guess it just, yeah, the biggest thing that I see, it's just there's a lot of concerned residents already, mm-hmm. and because, yeah. And the plan has not even, you know, been really fully developed. And so I think it's going to be very important to work with the community that's living there, because they will be the community that will continue to live there as all these changes happen. And it would be, I think, immoral to price them out of where they live just by a transit program. So something has to be really looked into thoroughly about how this is going to work.
Thank you, Commissioner Mazzola.
Yeah, I kind of want to echo what Commissioner Dunlop was saying. So is there a way we can look into the residents that are there now or that continue to live there in the future can be grandfathered in under some kind of plan?
Yes, that is definitely one option. Yeah, and so next time that we come back, we'll bring you some specifics on that question, this question about options for low-income travelers, low-income residents, and existing residents.
Okay, I think that's important, and we should see that. I don't know if I missed it or not, did you speak about multiple trips off the island one day? Would you pay once? Or would you pay every time you went back and forth?
The scenarios that we've looked at so far would be a payment each time, now on and off, although there could be a scenario where, say, after an on and an off, there's a cap potentially. That's something we could look at.
Okay. I'd like to see you look at that and also look at, you know, if you're living out there and you have to make a few trips to the city, you'd only pay once. Mm-hmm. Like Commissioner Dunlop said, I think it's kind of a burden, especially for the people that are used to not paying and living there now.
Right.
If you're going to buy a unit or rent a unit out there and you know what you're getting into, that's one mm-hmm. thing. But if you live there for 15 years and all of a sudden you got to pay tolls, that's a little rough.
Right.
And then as far as the procedure goes, you were saying that our board is going to make the final determination on how the tolls work. Is that how this is going to work?
So that's a question that we're looking into right now, actually, because the in response to having been designated as the Treasure Island Mobility Management Agency, we need to sort out what the division of roles and responsibilities is between the TIDA board and this mobility management agency. And we can probably bring answers to those kind of questions back next time, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Rachel, and... we actually designated you, you know, with the help of the Board of Supervisors, absolutely. That's why it's very, we still have obligations mm-hmm. to the residents. And so that even make it even for this infrastructure committee we created, because our input also will guide the Board of Supervisors. One of our members is Supervisor Jane Kim, and also the City and County of San Francisco. We are in a position to help to broaden that discussion, even what we do here, we do our job well, we can sell that to the rest of the city. That's our, we call it our role here. So it's in a partnership there, and that's why we are striving to understand what is going on, because the first leg, the resident come to us, we represent them. And so we are all the partners in here. And again, like I said, the division, a ferry should be able to go to Oakland, because part of this, we want you to also to look at the overall to get a sort of a regional. That's how we're going to be able to share the cost and also make it accessible. If someone can leave San Francisco and travel on ferry to Oakland, that alleviates a congestion for Treasure Island residents that are driving. And so we're looking at this as a whole, and that's why this is a heavily ambitious project. Commissioner Kanciski.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. That was great. I'm glad that you're thinking about the lower-income residents on the island and folks who are going to be living in the affordable housing, but I have a few questions and comments. First, I was wondering if you're working closely with Sherry Williams and Tie-Dye to do outreach to the current residents that are there who are living in affordable housing.
Yes, they've been really helpful. We've been going to the food pantry on Tuesdays and surveying there as one of the main things that we've been trying to do in addition to the door-to-door.
Okay. I think there's a few other populations we need to think about in terms of the pricing. One is lower wage workers who are going to be on the island doing service jobs and being able to not only attract people to come and work on the island, but also to make it so that they're not bankrupting themselves, getting on and off the island to do important work to keep things running. The other are people who move on to the island who are working and then become, maybe because they're seniors or due to disability, are now on a fixed income and basically can't afford to live in their homes anymore, or even worse, become sort of hostages to a toll that, really is cutting into their income. And I'm sure some of this is going to be tied into subsidies or discounts on the public transit options, but I think that folks, of all income levels sometimes just need to have access to cars, and to make that, prohibitive for folks at lower or fixed incomes is, seems unfair. The other, question I have, which is actually more for folks at the other income spectrum, is I think the idea of discouraging driving is wonderful and very supportive of that. Although I do think one of the ways that people who tend to not drive or even don't have cars is to occasionally rely on taxis or on rideshare services, like Lyft and Uber, and wondering how you're going to price it to not make it impossible for people who, want to just use a taxi because they miss the bus or the ferry and they need to get to work, to be able to attract a rideshare or a taxi out mm-hmm. there. I think is another thing to think about in terms of the discouraging the use of individual cars. And I think I'll hold the rest of my questions for your next presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Sumer.
All right. Well, this is very complicated, I have to say. And I would like to echo Commissioner Dunlop and Mr. Kozitsky's comments. Welcome onto the commission, Director.
Thank you.
Although there are major concerns, affordability and you know, access to jobs, access to work sites. There is also a different layer of people who may choose not to leave the island for work. You know, people work virtually. I know there is going to be some kind of some type of mandatory assessment to pay for the ferry terminal. I'm not sure how you're going to do that, but there are perhaps certain residents, perhaps many residents, who will not be utilizing those services. And how would you talk about that? Somebody who's choosing to buy or rent onto the island, who works virtually out of their home, are they going to pay a fee per month to pay for the new ferry terminal? Perhaps we'll make a decision that that is something that is a cost to them for living on the island that's going to pay for the infrastructure. But we'll have to take a look at that. I think we made a decision that it's a one-to-one parking. I guess it's supporting driving when you have one-to-one parking. I would like to take a look at some kind of a fee for having a car, perhaps, maybe the use of the garage, some kind of a monthly fee for use of garage. I do look forward to you receiving more of the information. I didn't have this in front of me earlier. I would have thought more about it, and I think we could be more helpful in giving you more feedback. But this is really very complicated and very complex. And, you know, one thing that I want to also say is it's also good to sort of make it a uniform policy. I know it's already a bit different in the Bay Area. HOV in the North Bay is two people. On the Bay Bridge, it's three people. So I don't know why that is the case, but that's how it is. And in fact, I was driving up to Sonoma last Friday, and I kept looking to make sure that it's really two and not three, because I didn't want to pay the fine. So so whatever we do on and off the island, we don't want it to be a confusing policy. And certainly, I think that would be better to be more the Bay Bridge policy, but. I do look forward to getting more information from you, and thank you for being here, and thank you for your work. Okay,
Commissioner Aragon, please.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm new to the authority here, so this is my second time, so excuse my ignorance. To me, there's an equity principle here that I want to understand.
Okay.
And here's where you have to forgive my ignorance. To me, it seems like for people that choose to live on Treasure Island, I'm thinking this is like a neighborhood, and it costs a certain amount to live there. And why should I be treated differently than anybody else in San Francisco? Mm-hmm. No one else in San Francisco is that. So that's sort of one issue, that if I live there, I should be able to travel in and out and not be penalized, travel in and out of my neighborhood without being penalized the way anybody else in San Francisco. So did I miss anything there?
Well, it's a fair question.
So that's a geographic inequity that's sort of built in here. And in a sense, it sort of encourages inequity, because it's almost like taking a neighborhood of San Francisco and saying, to come in and out of this neighborhood, you now have to pay this price. So it sort of creates a geographic inequity. The second inequity is the issue of just, if this moves forward with that type of inequity, then you have to ensure that the low income people aren't penalized for being low income. So that's sort of what I want to say. So in principle, there's something seems amiss here. And the last thing is that we're all paying taxes, and we sort of, you know, we're paying taxes, and we're expecting that we're paying for the roads and the infrastructure and the bridge, and that I should be able to, except for that, what everybody does, that I should be able to move in and out of where I live without being treated differently than anybody else in the Bay Area or the city. So that's just a comment.
Yeah. Well, they're great questions, and the sort of things that really complicated. I mean, I would love to have a dialogue about some of these things, right? I'll look to Bob. Maybe it's something we could do in the committee.
We're going to have to do that. And again, San Francisco, the revenue from Treasure Island at some point will help San Francisco. So that's why earlier on, I'm already thinking that when we have transportation bonds or whatever, we need to think about Treasure Island. This is not a discussion that ship the burden to the developers or wherever. This is that San Francisco obligations to look at transportation, as Dr. Aragon says. If I live on Treasure Island, regardless of my economic status, I need to be able to go anywhere without being penalized. And as it is now, only rich folks are going to be living on Treasure Island, because at some point, if I have to pay the toll, I will not even come here to recreate. So I think you got that right, Mr. Beck.
Yeah, I just wanted to maybe provide some comments on Director Aragon's questions, but also to highlight a couple of things that may not have been immediately apparent in the presentation. First, the three scenarios that have been run so far. Scenario one looked at tolling only during the AM and PM commute peaks, so majority of the day was no toll. And then scenarios two and three look at tolling from 6:30 to 7:30 with no toll outside of those windows. So the structures that have been proposed, studied so far, do have substantial hours where there is no toll. Some alternatives could be to extend the hours of the tolling greater, which might bring down the average toll at any given time. So that maybe tolling extends until the ferry service quits in the evening, but that it could be a lower average toll at any given time during that window. Also, the scenario three, by having the higher peak toll, has lower tolls outside of the peak. Question with Director Samaha. There's not going to be a payment on the new homeowners to pay for the terminal, but new market rate housing will be required under the TTIP to buy a monthly transit pass. So essentially, it'll work as if you pay your HOA, your homeowners association dues, and you get a monthly transit voucher back. We're still working with the Transportation Authority and some of the regional transit providers on what that voucher could be or should be. We're looking at a number of options there. Just in terms of the idea of the congestion pricing and tolling as a geographical equity issue, one of the big challenges in developing a development program for the island, as I think most of the directors know, was how do we develop this location without having an adverse impact on the Bay Bridge? And so one of the goals that's one of the reasons that residential housing ended up being the program for Treasure Island instead of a football stadium or some of the other uses that were discussed early on that would have had much higher swings in travel patterns. One of the objectives that was set out in the TTIP to further minimize that impact was to have a 50% of the trips on and off the island being done via transit. In order to induce people to use that transit, we needed to have a very high level of transit service. And so really the congestion management tolls here are intended to subsidize a level of transit service that is not available in most other neighborhoods in the city. I mean, really, if you look at a 7.5-minute headway that's proposed on the 108, the only place in San Francisco where you find that during the peak is on the 38 Geary. So it really is kind of a very high level of transit service. And that's also in addition to AC transit service and ferry service as well. So It is a very ambitious transit policy, but there's a lot of thinking that went into that as a recommendation.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Just one more thing is that I guess for me it's the overall impact. Mm-hmm. Because we have so many bits and pieces, costs that will add up to the residents of Treasure Island, and for me to make a decision on what the tolling should be, I would like to know what they're going to be paying per month on the other impact fees, basically, and what is, we don't want to create a community that is only for the wealthy, or that people will not move there because it's too expensive, because it doesn't just exist on its own. It's a part of a regional community. People have options. They could live in the East Bay. They could live in San Francisco. They could live anywhere else, and they're making decisions as to where they want to buy or rent, and they're looking at their dues per month. They're looking at, you know, the tolling that they will have to pay and to go to work and come back from work. So what is it all going to look like? So it would be good to get a more comprehensive picture.
Thank you, Commissioner Singh.
I think most of the points that I wanted to make were already made already, but thank you, Rachel, for giving us an overview of your thinking at this point in time, and certainly there's going to be a lot more discussion. And I think most of us are concerned what the impact is going to be for low-income residents of the island, and to make sure that they can afford whatever plan we devise. But it's certainly true that the original reasoning for having a traffic congestion plan was because of the environmental impacts of building 8,000 more homes on Treasure Island, and the fact that the only way, if you have a car, to get on and off the island is on the Bay Bridge. And so there was, you know, a real concern to create alternate forms of transit and to make sure that there was public transit available so people would veer from having car ownership to taking as much as possible those public transit, you know, transit alternatives that would be made available for Treasure Island. But that only works if we have those other public transit mm-hmm. alternatives. Mm-hmm. And I think that what is in front of us is how to make sure that there's enough funding for those transit services. Otherwise, you will have an island without adequate transit services and without also having the car vehicles and a congestion fee, you know, so that low-income people definitely would not be able to afford it. So, and I know that we've had a plan, financial plan. I'm hoping that perhaps in the committee and then together for the TIDA board as a whole that we will get a chance to review that, because the financial plan is certainly the most important thing to make sure that we have the ferry service every 15 minutes, that we have the Muni service continue. That we have the ACT, you know, connections, and how much of that is going to be funded through the new development and through the developers, how much is that funded through fee for service, how much is that funded yeah. through public subsidy, you know, from the city itself. All of those things have to be considered. But I think that the worst possible alternative would be if we have a congestion plan where the fees are so high, and yet we don't have any of the public transit alternatives. And I know that what you're trying to do is to come up with models which will allow us to bolster the public transit alternatives, and some of that is going to have to be paid by those congestion fees. Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioner Kofiuski, please.
Thank you. I think the idea of the toll and congestion pricing is forward-thinking, and I'm very supportive of it. And it also occurs to me sitting up here that we are coming up with all these concerns and thoughts that are taking away your revenue that you need to make this viable. So a couple of things that I think we might want to think about to make it more equitable for people based on their income levels on the island. One is, and not that I think apps can solve all social problems, but I do think there might be a way to create a ride-sharing type of app for the island so people who need to make the trip can just carpool with somebody more effectively. I mean, Lyft and Uber are doing that now. So I'm sure that that can be done, and encouraging, and I'm sure you've already thought of this, car sharing services, you know, on the island as well. But also creating, a card, that people can use, and it could be adjusted based on their income levels that maybe would make the toll, automatically lower, or providing them a discount on the transit. So I think there's a lot of creative things that we can do to both help mitigate the impact of the tolls, which I think are going to be necessary, by using technology to help accommodate folks who may need, a little bit of help to make this work for them.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Dunlop.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to touch on Dr. Aragon's thought, which I think is really prescient because, the citizens paid for the essentially the transportation and a lot of the buildup for the Giants ballpark. It was most the ballpark itself was funded by private parties, but the city paid for the infrastructure, which means the people paid for the infrastructure. We have a light rail that now goes out on 3rd Street, touching to a new neighborhood that hadn't had any connection. And once again, it was paid for through the city by essentially taxes. And we look at practically any modern recent transportation development within the city, it's been paid for by the citizens. And somehow or another, the people in Treasure Island don't get that benefit. So they're really just kind of half citizens or something. Perhaps there is a need to have some pricing, but I certainly think that there should be some consideration to subsidy, and perhaps, this would, I'm sure, take a voter initiative, but, a half-cent sales tax, something like that, because, once again, we're asking something for a neighborhood, because that's what they're really calling Treasure Island. We're asking something for a neighborhood that no other neighborhood has ever had to pay.
Thank you very much. Before I ship this to public comments, we appreciate your presentation today, Rachel, and please do make sure that we get the copies immediately after this meeting. And again, we're very passionate about what is going on here. I think what we would like to do as commissioners, more than just even looking at all these studies, to be an advocate. I think from our discussions, we're already even thinking ahead there, the Amtrak type solution. The city has an obligation here. And we are in a position through our dialogue and debate to maybe getting the city to look at the broader picture here, whereby the next bond measure for transportation that I pay for, people at Treasure Island pay for, that we can incorporate something with regards to Treasure Island. Because even people that live on the mainland, they want to come to Treasure Island also. So it is a symbiotic relationship, and hence this discussion to not just look at us being situated in a debate so that we can maximize at some point. Someone is going to have to invest some million in the city to make sure that people can get from the ferry down to San Francisco. And at some point, the MTC and all these stakeholders, they need to look at, coming from the region, because all transportation right now has those kinds of regional approaches to that. So we are very excited, and so what you've done is really great, and we need to begin this dialogue now. And again, hence, people can see the value of creating this committee so that we can all be part of this discussion representing the islanders. At this point, I'm going to ask for the public comments on what you've heard. I see Cheryl, and here. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Sherry Williams, Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative. First, I wanted to thank what I think has been a very thoughtful process that you've put together, and they have been really doing their outreach on the in the community. And I also want to thank you all, too, for your sensitivity and your remarks about the equity issues that that this very complicated plan, you know, raises. When the plan was actually first vetted and over a series of years, the transportation plan, and it was in conceptual form, and, it, and at that time it was always we're going to pass this plan in concept to have congestion pricing, but then when we actually implement a plan, we will address the issues of equity, we will address the issues of discounts and how we're going to address how low-income residents will be impacted by this pricing. So that's where we are today, and so that's why I'm very grateful to hear all of your very sensitive and thoughtful comments and suggestions on that. I will say that when I saw the presentation and it was $5 first, you know, to get on and off the island, it kind of, you know, floored me because I guess we've never seen really a number, you know, attached to what that would really mean. And, you know, we have a lot of residents because all the children are bused to other schools. No children go to school on the island. So there are plenty of families who take their kids in the morning to school all around the city, drive their kids and then drive back to the island, pick up their kids later, drive back later, then maybe even go to a teacher meeting in the evening. I mean, that could be like in one day, $30. So it did actually have to say that it may, I know we're being thoughtful and I appreciate that. And I know there'll be time and to vet this out, but it couldn't be stressed enough of how important it's going to be to find an equitable solution to this. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Hi, Becky Hogue, resident. We heard this presentation at the CAB last night, and all three residents on the CAB were basically said what you've all said. It's not fair to make the residents be the brunt of this. Like one of my colleagues on the CAB last night said, so if I have to go to Safeway, it's going to cost me $10 just to go buy some groceries. Because let's face it, it's not feasible to, you know, if you're doing major grocery shopping, to take public transportation on and off the island. While we know that it's going to be an impact, we just don't want to see it be a gated community where only people that are rich. Somebody said telecommuting, but not everyone has a job that can telecommute. So I appreciate all of you thinking about us residents. An issue where they said they've gone door to door. Their door to door getting input was leaving their little postcard on people's front doors. So I don't see where that's that much outreach to the residents. I mean, I'm glad to see that they're going to the pantry. I know they were at a community meeting, but I think that someone mentioned doing a meeting or something for just the transportation issue. And I think that would be really good. We know that the future residents and the present residents will probably be two different types of people, but there are a lot of us that do want to stay out there, but we don't want to be priced out. I'm disabled. I live on a fixed income. So, you know, that, like Sherry said, $30 in one day if you had to go on and off the island is a big chunk of money when we're already having to pay for a pass every month in our rent also. So I, again, say thank you and, you know, hope that the dialogue can continue. And I really hope that the dialogue can get to more of the residents on the island. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there any other public comments? Seeing none, again, thank you, Rachel, for your presentation. And we look forward to working with you and your agency as we proceed with this development. Thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to the continued dialogue around all these complicated questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next.
Item number 11, update on construction of YBI Bay Bridge westbound ramps.
While he's bringing up the presentation, I just want to say it's been a few months since we've giving you an update on the status of the ramps projects, and the work is kind of happening out of view. So there has been a remarkable amount of work done, and want to thank Mike for coming and giving us an update.
Thank you. I'm Michael Scott with Parsons Brinkhoff, representing the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. I'm the resident engineer on the project up there. So I'd like to give you a brief project overview about how it's going. Background, as you're aware, the project was awarded back in December 2013 to Golden State Bridge for $49 million. Construction started. You also may be aware we had a few challenges with some of the birds earlier in the season. We met all the environmental requirements. Once the birds fledged from the nest, we started construction at a very, very rapid pace. Currently, right now, we're about 36% complete from a dollar standpoint. Major current activities on the projects include utility relocations, foundation construction, column construction. We're prepping for removing the historic buildings, and we just recently completed the detour roads. Talk about that. The forest road detour is open. It's primarily used for U.S. Coast Guard staff, and that road. It is used by some construction staff as well when needed. Scheduled completion for the project is August 2016, and we are on schedule to meet that. Right now, we're moving very fast. As I said, we're moving faster than the schedule. We're about 16% complete on the working days. There's 550 working days on the project. 36% complete in dollars. That means we're moving much faster than the schedule. So we should complete actually a little bit ahead of August 2016, depending on weather. Progress payments to date to the contractors, almost $18 million. So moving very quickly. One very good point of news here is we are exceeding the DBE goal. The federal DBE goal on this project is 12.5%. And currently through August 20th, we paid out $3.2 million to DBE firms. So we have very good participation on this project. Just a little fun facts, figures, and notes. Overall in the project, it's a big project. We've got 12,500 cubic yards of concrete we're putting out there. That's 1,400 truckloads. That's a lot of trucks coming on and off the island. 5 million pounds of reinforcing steel going in. A total of 37,000 feet of piling. Hundreds of piles, about 800 piles, which equates to about 7 miles of total pile length. And about 185 tons of structural steel that's being placed. I just want to show a few photos of the construction. You can see here we are building the large columns. These are the tallest columns down on the lower part of Yerba Buena Island, about 160 feet tall. Today we just completed the column there to your left with the concrete, our final pour on that. And we're moving forward with the other columns, working our way up down from the lower yard up to towards McCullough Road. This is the on-ramp structure. That's adjacent to the Caltrans substation where the old on-ramp was. We're replacing that. We're actually now building the false work up there, and you should see the bridge taking place within the next few weeks out there. Footing construction, this is just a snapshot of the area that is just below Northgate Road, right above the historic district down there. We're putting in piling down there. We're going to see a lot of more activity over several months in there. We should have all the columns completed, footings and columns completed in that location by the beginning of the year. We've got up to 40-foot excavations in that area, so very deep, very complex shoring system that's being put in. McCullough Road detour is completed, but it's not open to traffic yet. That will be open when we close a section of McCullough Road that is adjacent to the Quarters 10 area over there. We've got to reconstruct that portion of the road along with the new utility systems being placed there. Forest Road detour, that road is basically for Coast Guard use. Currently, Southgate Road is closed, which was just closed last week by the Caltrans contractor. That was a main access point for the Coast Guard to get through down to their yard. So the Coast Guard has directed this road be open. We understand it is a concern, so we'll actually outreach to the Coast Guard and work with Director Beck to see what we can do to get some additional patrols up there and do something. But it is a challenge to control traffic up there. We are monitoring for safety to make sure things are safe. We did notice some of the K-rail got hit by graffiti, so we're going to be painting that white to try to minimize some of that.
Oh, very dangerous.
That stuff that goes on up there. But that is a challenge, and that road is kind of at this point controlled by the Coast Guard. But we'll continue working with them to try to minimize impacts. Quarters 10 is getting close to be ready to be moved. Building 267, which is a small garage, should be moved in mid-November, excuse me. And then quarters 10 will be moved mid-December, and that will be done over probably 3 days on a weekend. It's going to be a very long, slow process. There will be a lot of outreach done before this building is moved, or either building is moved, to make sure there's notifications, because there will be some traffic impacts that we'll need to address out there during the move. And this is where we're moving it to. You can see the Clipper Cove site just above Clipper Cove. The work is proceeding down there, and foundations are being built for the retaining walls and the new restroom facilities that will be constructed. So with that, I'd be pleased to...
Yes, sir. Thank you for the update. A couple of questions here. At the last meeting, we talked about bicycle. I think the Bay Bridge is going to be open pretty soon. Has it already been open?
The new bike path on the eastern span of the Bay Bridge is expected to open May, June of 2015.
Yes.
So it's a few months away.
So, and how are we incorporated? Because you know it's going to be like a zoo down there. Just about everybody's going to come. And I'm just looking at this forest road and all of that. How can that place accommodate? How is the bicycle lane? I mean, you can't afford to make a mistake, even with the new anything, because of the hills. And so, can you shed light on that?
Maybe Bobby wants to fill in.
I can maybe answer that. I've been working closely with Eric Cordoba, who is the project manager for the Transportation Authority on the Rams project, and with Caltrans. We've also reached out to MTA. Because when the bicyclists first come to the island, the Rams project will not be completed, and it'll be around the time or shortly after that time that the developer will be starting work on McCalla Road. So McCalla Road, throughout most of its length, will be under construction for about 18 months. So the primary location where bicyclists will be able to go will be on Hillcrest. And so I've requested the MTA to propose a stripage and signing traffic calming measures on Hillcrest so that bicyclists and cars can coexist. There are some portions of Hillcrest where we can provide a class two, a separate bike lane, but over most of it, it'll be a shared traffic situation with cars, and so we'll need to be doing a lot of signage and outreach to people to keep to have them coexist. Caltrans is also talking with the Coast Guard about potentially leasing one of the buildings the Coast Guard has near where the ramps end, so that there could be some sort of destination. Even if it's just a place where someone can buy a tire patch and a bottle of water, some sort of something there near the bike ramp itself, where that would encourage people to stop there rather than going down Hillcrest. And we'd also have signage advising people of what the grades are on Hillcrest, so that before they bike down the hill and have to face the climb back up, they know what they are facing.
Thank you. This is a very major, and you are on top of that, you know, because it's going to get a little bit dangerous. And second has to do with the quarters 10. Where is that going to? What is it going to be moved to?
It's going to be moved to Clipper Cove, which is Clipper Cove Park, which is just above
the historical. Yes.
Exactly, and it will be moved down there. We're building a restroom. Parking lot, pathways, and such for the public.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Dunlop.
Piggyback on that, what then is the building going to be used for? You know, it's a historic building. Is it going to be like souvenir store? Is it going to be a restaurant? Or
well, I'll have to defer that to Director Beck.
Yeah, I've been Rich Rivetti, who managed our commercial leasing, and I have been talking about potential reuses for it. One of the possibilities is a restaurant or you know some sort of food facility. As we start the development on YBI, I mean on Treasure Island, some of the existing access to some of the existing facilities, the market by the gate will have to be relocated. So we're going to have to relocate some existing commercial functions. And so one of the conversations has been around that as a possibility. We've also had some conversations with TICD about potentially renting a portion of the building or the whole building to be a kind of a welcoming center to provide information about the development and stuff like that. So we haven't defined yet what the use will be, but we're talking about what some of the options could be.
Some of the residents, again, as I had mentioned, and you've pretty much addressed it, though, are, you know, that the road that really was just supposed to be for construction and Coast Guard seems to be just a shortcut for many people. And so that has some of the residents a little disturbed because they're, you know, people get very excitable there. And they, you know, they just wasn't the proposed use. They don't like the idea of more strangers or whatever. So that's certainly one question, and then just one more. The other new road, the one that, I guess it's the McCalla bypass, but the one that is like a ski slope that, you know, fortunately, I haven't seen any skateboarders going down it, but it would be quite attractive and maybe dangerous because it is so steep. It's very steep. How are trucks, like construction trucks, going to make it up there?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's about as steep as the current McCalla Road, about 18%. That portion of McCalla Road where it goes up to the very top, there's two lines, one. Mm-hmm. Right near quarter 62, and the other one goes up towards Yerba Buena Road, I believe it is.
Right
there at the hairpin. We don't anticipate much traffic on that. That may be used for detours when we're moving the house to get traffic around. We don't anticipate having traffic on that at any time, nor heavy truck traffic going up there. Can't say it won't be done, but we don't anticipate it and certainly wouldn't recommend it for larger truck traffic because they just can't make the turns once they get up there.
It's too good to plan.
If I can also address one of the concerns that we did try to do some added measures for Forest Road. We did add some signs that said private road. We also worked with, of course, signs, you're keeping the honest people out, right? we also added, worked with the Coast Guard. We got a bunch of signs that said area subject to search and seizure, U.S. government property. We posted about six of those up through that area, and we do recognize it as a challenge. So maybe there's more we can do, and I'll look into that and report to Director Beck on any actions that we think we can take that might help.
Definitely appreciate that. And I did notice, it's kind of funny, there is the basketball hoop that's remained there. Is that just sort of a memento of past times?
It was just kind of right outside where we had to do our work, so we didn't touch it.
It's very cute. It's kind of like, oh.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir. Before it might be great to plan for everything, because that still, even if it's not going to be a major thoroughfare and it might be used occasionally, believe me, they're going to use it. And all it takes is one accident there. And so it might be, since for the entire area, that we look at everything and just plan accordingly as part of that development. Because, and again, the roads are very narrow. We're talking of a very limited space. And some of these people, visitors or whatever, you know, they just like water find its own level. They're going to use it. So please, if you can really think about that, so we can mitigate and minimize any kind of adverse danger, since we are planning for everything. No stone should be left unturned. So at this point, I am going to be asking for public comments. And seeing none, they like your presentation. Thank you, sir. Okay.
And item number 12, discussion of future agenda items by directors.
None. And so I think we're ready to adjourn. I want to thank my fellow commissioners and staff for your great work and for our partners and Treasure Island residents and our partners. Thank you for your presence today. We'll see you next time. Thank you. Really great meeting.
Well done.
Thank you, Kate. It takes a while getting you know.
I still like it.
That'd be great.
I apologize. For
This is so nice.
Harder to navigate that thing.
Second meeting, yes.
And I'll be looking forward to the orange and black.
So.
I'm going to talk to Peter about that right now.
I had an orange.
I said, you're traveling next week and a week after.